life is easier when one of us is there. Yeah, yeah.
Look. I don't know what happened.
I think the drum mic is messed up.
Oh, that's okay.
We can still hear it.
Thanks, guys. We're called Yesayer. Thank you. Excited to be a part of this whole NPR thing for Sirius. David Dye introduced us. That actually was very cool. Philadelphia. We've talked about him many a time in our van.
My sister taught his daughter in ballet.
That's the most boring story. I don't care.
Not planned. Just because you've heard it
not
30 times.
I haven't. Thanks, guys. Thank you. the shortest set ever tonight. You know, we're gonna play one or two more songs, depending on the clock.
Oh, you said just one.
One more song. The clock has spoken. Everyone's going like this.
They don't even want that.
Everyone, a bunch of hippies out there. Thanks. Thank you guys so much. Thank you to NPR. Thank you for having us. South by Southwest. Is that a person? I don't even know. Is there someone I can talk to? Thanks. Oh, Thank you very, very much.
Thank you.
Have a wonderful weekend.
Chris Keating, and play some junk on the, in the front of the stage. I don't know, on a table.
And you use your voice somewhat, yeah?
Yes, that's why I sound like a frog right now.
Luke Fasano, I play the drums-related electronic percussion and backing vocals as well.
I'm Anand Wilder. I sing and I play guitar and synthesizer and a little bit of tambourine.
Oh, a lot of
okay, yeah. All right. I'm pretty good.
I'm Ira Wolf Dutton, and I play the bass and I sing.
We have a pitchfork party that we're doing tonight. I think we play at 5:30, 4:30. And then tomorrow we're doing a Don't Mess With Texas party at Waterloo Park. Breeders are headlining. Pretty excited about that one.
Yeah. Why the Breeders? I wouldn't catch the...
Why are we excited?
Yeah.
They're a seminal band from our youth.
Yeah. I mean, even more than
being 12 and listening to the Breeders and stuff is pretty exciting. And they're important. I don't know.
For me, the Breeders, or I don't really know any songs by them except for Cannonball, but I think what we take from that song is like the uniqueness of that opening riff that's on the bass. And I think we try to have a unique part in all of our songs. You know, something that's just like an interesting tone, an interesting riff, an interesting rhythm that kind of defines that song and makes it instantly kind of recognizable from the first few bars, you know?
Right. I mean, and that song is also structured in a very, that's the kind of pop music where it's very layered. It's not just, you know, three guitars with distortion on, jangly, jangly, jangly. You know, then that guitar part comes in, na-na-na-na-na-na-na. And it has that whole...
Like two guitars.
Interlocking. Yeah, it's only two guitars. Has the whole interlocking tone thing going on, interrelationships.
And their music, certainly your music when I was listening to it. At first, when I heard the record, I thought, there's a lot of improv going on to make this stuff up. And then I realized, when I saw you play it, there's entire intent going on. I mean, everything is really tightly knit.
Very little improv, yeah. Well, There's some kind of conscious change that happens for live shows and in between shows, but there's not really. We play to, I mean, Luke plays to like samples and loops, so it's like you're not really not gonna improv that much.
Yeah, it's the same. I mean, every performance we do is the same tempo.
If we change something, it's very conscious. It's a decision where we're gonna change this just because we're getting bored of it.
Yeah. But that takes some time, just having to rework that. We don't do that on the spot. We don't, you know, just try to remake up parts of the songs. They're like, then we have the middle jam out part.
Yeah.
We don't do that.
Sometimes my guitar solo changes because I mess up.
Yeah. Like, improv is just because we screw up. Yeah. Yesterday I dropped the tambourine on the, I don't know if you guys heard it, but I dropped it by accident on there. Like, wow, wow. And I was like, I'll just play that part again.
The definition of jazz, in fact.
Yeah, that's me, baby.
So, but when the songs come together, is there strict intent there? I mean, I don't even know how you write songs, so maybe if you told me that, it would help figure out.
It's a mixed bag. We all have our home studios, so we all record our own things, which obviously is totally intentional, you know, because it's just us sitting in our dark rooms, layering over things and, you know, writing different riffs, writing song structure. There's also another level of hashing stuff out, especially once we've written something, figuring out how we're going to write it live. That might come in a little more, you know, trying to improvise on some different parts and figure out how we can translate it. And I guess we've written some songs that have come out of practice sessions just before we started, you know, going over our set, just kind of getting there and all of us plugging in and starting to play, and something comes out of it and recording it, and then bringing that into our home studios and cutting that up, chopping that up, editing it, re-editing, passing it to one another, and just constantly reworking and working with each other.
Basically, no song is just worked out from scratch in our practice space.
Yeah, no.
Even if we're working on a jam or something, it's always taken back to the home studio, cut up, looped, structurized, and you know, then we take it back and figure it out live.
Yeah, I think I understand it, but I'm not sure. If you take me a little step one, two, three, four, because what I'm not sure is, like, what instruments are being played in this home studio, and what are you passing along to the drummer? What is the drummer? What are you adding to what comes back? You know what I mean?
A song like the last song on the record kind of came together with we're all playing together.
Which song?
Like Waves or something, you know, and Ira was playing this kind of loop guitar part. We recorded it and kind of didn't really think. We thought this is cool, but we kind of sat on a four track, and then I was like, well, I like that part. And then I kind of sampled his playing from the practice session, and in that sample was drums, you know, and all the stuff we were doing, but it was like just a 2-second loop. Looped that, and then looped the next part that we kind of went into in the jam just to make it, there was a chord change, and it kind of started being a structure of a song. So laid that out, wrote a little vocal thing over it. So it was like we kind of use our own playing as a way to sample ourselves, like it was from an old record in a way. And then I had that little thing, and then, you know, various different people would come in, Anand came in, laid some stuff down, changed it, made it go into another part. And so it's like, since we're working on this computer, you know, you can just, each person kind of comes in, it's like, look what I did to your song, look what I did. I was like, oh, you don't like it, or you like it? Oh, cool, like, let's keep working on that, let's go that direction, or let's go the other direction. It's, you know, it's a great way of working.
It's a great way of working, and you come out with a really different music. It's I don't even know how to...
A sonic mess.
Yeah. It's only a great way of working if
there's an end to it.
If you have good taste.
Yeah. Only unfortunate thing, we could just keep doing that forever, because it could keep being like, well, now I'm going to do my edit of that. No, I'm going to do my edit. I'm going to do my edit. And then no one's ever like, this is my song that I wrote, and you're torturing it to death.
Yeah.
In the end, is it the performance of the sonic mess the thing that makes us all
keep... Turns us on.
Yeah, I guess that's probably the best way to put it.
No, I think the creation of new songs is what turns us on. Yeah, I mean, playing live is great. I love entertaining people, but definitely making something new, kind of realizing that you can still make new music is the biggest thrill for me.
I agree. Yeah, I totally agree. I think the composition is by far what I'm in it for. That's what I've always kind of
enjoyed. We switched up the arrangement to one of our songs, Final Path, in where were we, in Sweden or something, and just working that out, figuring out how to arrange it, was just like a breath of fresh air. It was the best part of tour,
Well, because there's a creative problem solving in there that you really encounter in no other place on tour, because, I mean, other than figuring out how you're going to get to the next show in time or in sleep. But other than that, you know, you make very few creative decisions along the way.
The other creative decisions on tour are just, you know, basically they're all these ridiculous problems that you have to deal with, and it's never going to be, you know, nothing brand new ever comes out of like those kind of potentially bad situations. It's just avoiding disaster when you're touring. You know, it's always like, oh God, we got to avoid disaster. We got to make it sound good. We got to make it sound competent, instead of being like, let's really do something new tonight. I don't know. At least that's us. Maybe other bands are different. But.
Well, we have a lot of really complicated pedals that get messed up with weird German power.
Yeah.
So Ira has this pedal that just, you click on all the six buttons, it just does a different... Oh.
Like Germany does not
only
like
Germany,
my pedal.
Only in Germany does it make that sound.
Yeah.
So does it make you play something different when?
Well, that was kind of our motivation to restructure the song, get a new arrangement, because we couldn't rely on his harmonic octave generator anymore.
Yeah.
So we went back to the roots.
Saddest day of tour.
So I guess the best part then is to like not be doing something like South by Southwest as much as being back home and the room is dark and.
No,
we haven't been home in 2 months.
Yeah.
So you know, for us. Yeah,
you're hungry.
All of us miss. I mean, some of us miss our girlfriends, but I think all of us definitely miss being at home and being able to work and compose and construct. And you know, because that's the movement. You know, touring is great, but you know, we're doing 5 shows at South by Southwest, and you know, it's kind of we've been doing the same thing every night for 2 months. You know, so the one part of it is you don't want your brain to get stagnant. You know, because, again, back to
that. I thought that was the reason we were in a band.
Oh, right, yeah.
So you don't want to think anymore.
Yeah, I think.
Wouldn't that be the reason to take a different approach to performing? If you start really doing this a lot, then that's going to drive you all out of your skulls, isn't it?
Well, no, I mean, I think the approach we have to the live show is, you know, when we have time off to practice, to rearrange what we're doing and figure out different ways and explore different ideas of, you know, how we're expressing our live show and how we're changing the recording, you know, from the taking it from the recording to the live show. So I don't think it's a case where it's like, all right, going out on the road again, playing the same songs the same exact way, because that side of it also seems terrible, you know, and I don't want to be in that kind of band either. I don't want to be like Interpol and playing it just like the record sounds, although, you know, they're a great band.
That record is nice.
You know, but
I think part of the thing is that when we want to restructure a song, it's not just what we like to think of. It's not that any one of us is tied to an instrument. So yeah, it's like, well, let's change around that guitar lick a little bit tonight, and that'll really satisfy our creative need for changing it for the night. It's more like, no, actually, we want to lose the guitar altogether, yeah, right, and you're not going to play the guitar for the next tour. Ira's not going to play. You know, it's like, I don't know what's going to happen, but it's more like, on this song, let's actually just have you not, so you can't really do that from night to night and be like, all right, tonight, just ditch that. Tonight, ditch the drum kit. Yeah. Play all standing up tonight. It's like you kind of need at least a week to work on those kind of ideas. You can't be just making it to the venue, sound check, and then be like, okay, ditch the bass. Yeah. It's all keyboards tonight.
I think the thing that saves us from total stagnation and boredom on the road is that we do have certain sections where we are free to just kind of noodle around for a little bit.
We are free.
But it'll just be, you know, for 8 measures, you can kind of do what you want, and then, boom, we're going to go into this one that we've really rehearsed. Yeah. And we like to play with that kind of contrast of the loose, sloppy kind of dissonance into very tight, structured harmony and everything.
I also think being a vocal band, that you are constantly, constantly working on trying to make your vocals tighter and tighter, much more than just kind of hitting the right fret on your guitar. So having that as a constant challenge definitely brings a little more...
Which is ironic because our vocals are just getting worse.
I heard Starland Vocal Band was having that problem all the time. Sort of our mentors, I'm reading.
Scar.
It's been great. Thanks for doing this. I really loved the show yesterday. There were moments that I actually had time to walk into the middle of the crowd. And
which show was it?
We did the NPR one. Yeah. NPR. So yeah, we were the ones. Yeah. So thanks.
That was a great show.
That was fun.
I had a great time. Yeah.